You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of February 14th, 2024. And if it isn't on Game Pass, why even bother?
Welcome back, everybody. This is the Experience Points podcast. My name is Scott Juster.
And I'm George Abor.
We are the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net. It is a serious but not humorless conversation about video games. And even Phil Spencer's getting into this podcasting business. You hear about this?
Yeah, it's so funny. I feel like, so we talked about this last week, about like, oh, maybe we should plan on talking about the Xbox thing. And I was expecting a big announcement. And then when I saw that it was going to be in a podcast, I was like, oh.
As it's someone one of these.
It's one of these. I do a podcast. Nothing of importance comes from a podcast.
Nothing of import will ever happen. Oh, my gosh. Yes, but let's like start at the very... Let's start... Well, I don't even know where the very beginning of this starts. Like, how did this all... How did this whole thing get kicked off? Like, was there some sort of leak or something?
Yeah, that's a good question. So there was some kind of leak about what Xbox was doing, and somehow the rumors started swirling that Xbox was considering porting major Xbox titles to other consoles.
Yes.
I don't know what happened or who started it, but the rumor quickly started to spread that Starfield was coming to the PlayStation 5, right?
Right. And in Starfield, ways, which had once been planned for the PlayStation 5 and then taken from the PlayStation
Five,
was coming back to the PlayStation 5.
I think there was equal parts excitement and equal parts feeling like this was a break in time, right? Like from this point on, anything could happen.
Yeah.
With the Xbox. And now I will say, I think some of that is still possible. It's still in the air. But the rumor started to spread, and it really blew up out of proportion, I suppose. And now that we've seen the actual podcast in which Phil Spencer and team basically, I don't know, what's a good way of framing it? Like, blew the smoke out of the room and was like, you guys need to chill out, essentially.
Yeah, they basically just told everyone to take a chill pill, you know, in so many words, which is very...
Yes.
Like, it's been a long time since I had seen a rumor get this much traction so fast, and people start to jump. Like, people were jumping to conclusions like, Microsoft's getting out of the hardware business.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
They were just going full on, like, Dreamcast style, where it was like, hey, they're just going to stop making this thing. And it's like,
I'm going to hurl my Xbox out the window. It's not getting supported anymore. Yeah.
We're going to remotely melt them down, too. Like, they just... It just happened very fast. Like I don't know. Like, I feel there was like a little bit of, it almost felt like a little bit of like old internet there for a minute.
Yeah.
Where like, just like weird unsubstantiated rumors take on a life of their own and then become truth. But yeah, it was a very funny, like fast, growth of that stuff.
Yeah. It was pretty wild. What I kind of love though, is some of my favorite comments on the YouTube video were like, this could have been an email.
You know, which, and it probably was internally.
It probably was internally. What's interesting though is they decided to, because they did announce, hey, you're all excited to hear more, we'll bring you more in our podcast next week. And I don't think
the funny thing is, at first they just said, we will have more to announce about the Xbox next week. Like, they didn't even say it was podcast
at first. That's right.
Yeah.
I think that did more harm than good in terms of quelling the fervor. Because very easily they could have just said, "Where the Xbox is not going away. We do not intend to change our strategy in any significant departure. Tune in for some minor detail," whatever. Like, I'm not a PR person, but they could have, I think, done it a little bit differently, because the podcast felt kind of weird. It felt very, very PR heavy, right? Like,
this
was addressing the rumors that were swirling around. There was a lot of keywords, some of which I want to talk about, because I think it's kind of interesting how much comes up here. But it felt like it was really just trying to sort of take the wind out of the room, right?
Yes.
Like, trying to clear the air, essentially.
I mean, like, I at some point, it's like, the you know, with a company as big as Microsoft, it's actually kind of hard to, like, set up an event and get everything together and get the script ready and get all the people and the production and the set and all of that stuff. Like, it takes time to do those things, especially at a big company.
Yeah.
And so it almost kind of feels like even for Microsoft, it got away from them where they were like, why are people going so crazy about this thing? It's like, we can't do a whole Xbox, you know, what do they call their things? Not Nintendo Directs, whatever Xbox calls its state of play, you know, it's like, we can't do a state of play next week because like half the team is off on ski week, you know, like what are we supposed to do here? And it's like, well, maybe we have it on the Xbox podcast, you know, like that. It almost felt like, well, we have to do something. And so like, I guess this is our platform. But to your point, I wonder why they didn't immediately just say, hey, there's some changes, but no major changes. We'll have more to say. Tune in to the like and subscribe the new podcast or the podcast we've been doing for more info. It's weird that they didn't immediately tamp it down and be, hey, don't worry about it, guys. It's going to be fine.
It felt to me like there was probably internal conflict as to how to approach it.
Yeah.
Right? Which is, because I could imagine there's a scenario where someone said, hey, any attention is good attention. Let's capitalize on this by making an announcement. And oftentimes, this is the case with any kind of major pickup. If it's something that's controversial, if it's a mistake someone made in an interview, if it's a misunderstanding in a press article that starts to go viral, both you and I have been on the other side of it internally. People move very, very quickly. And there's a lot of stakeholders involved and a lot of conversations that happen in a short amount of time. And the decision that comes out in those first 48 hours is not always the right one. And it's not always the one that sticks, right? Like it gets massaged over time. It felt to me like a scenario like that where first they were like, hey, maybe we can capitalize on this. Let's make an announcement. Uh-oh, it's getting bigger. We need to tamp it down. Okay, well, we already made the announcement. Okay, so let's do it on how do we frame this? Do we do a video? Do we do a press release? Do we do a news article? Do we sit down with an interviewer or whatever? They made the call to do this podcast. They actually did sit down with Tom Warren at The Verge, which is a really interesting interview with Phil Spencer, and then just sort of reined it back because it got a little bit out of control. And I kind of love it when this kind of shit happens because it reminds me that there are humans at these companies and things don't always go swimmingly. And
it's as much of a mess there than it is anywhere. And it's all just a mess of people just trying to kind of figure it out.
It's just, I think it really helps me to just calm things down sometimes and be like, oh, right. Like everyone is just kind of trying to figure it out, you know?
Right. So I guess just taking one more step back, you know, everyone, there was some, I think, I don't even know, like it feels like it's been a month. It's only actually been a couple weeks, but like there were some leaks around, I think some people had seen an update to Hi-Fi Rush that had suggested that there was going to be, you know, Nintendo Switch t-shirts in it or something. Like basically some people, you know, saw some game updates that suggested that some previously exclusive games were now going to be available multi-console, which then got everyone all, you know, kind of in a tizzy about it and just spun everything up. In the year 2024, though, like, what is your take on how and why people got so worked up by this?
I think there's a degree of two things, right? There's the Xbox diehards who see it as the sky is falling scenario, right? When was the last time we've had a company really, like, pull out in a big way that isn't, that's significant, right? Not like the Stadia or whatever. No one gives a shit about the Stadia.
I mean, like, it's got to be the Dreamcast, right? Like, I mean, that's a pretty dramatic, like, Sega exits the console, the console space in a pretty abrupt way.
And I think everyone knows that if Xbox wanted to do that, they probably could, right? Like, Game Pass is doing gangbusters. They have a major presence on PC. Yes, they have this hardware that's the Xbox, but if they wanted to create a path towards getting out of the hardware game, you could envision what that path would look like. And I don't, that path is not gone, right? So I think there's valid reason to believe is this the signs of a very different future from a hardware perspective?
Right.
Then on the other side are the people who are not Xbox diehards. And in fact, it's the opposite excitement, right? Like, wow, we have seen the importance of exclusives dwindle and dwindle over the years to a point where it's not even that big of a deal, right? It's a handful of games. Right. Even Phil Spencer mentions this in his interview with Tom Warren at The Verge, where, you know, we're not in an era where a single exclusive sells hardware anymore, right?
Right.
And we all know that. And so with that being the context, you could imagine a case where Xbox said, okay, sure, we're still going to have our Xbox consoles, but we're going to be really aggressive by making our Xbox Microsoft games available across platforms. Yeah. And you can play them on the Switch, and you can play them on the PlayStation 5. And if you're a PlayStation 5 owner, that's great news. Like, you don't need to worry about it, you know?
Right.
Or if you're on, if you're someone that's like, oh, I don't know which console I want to buy for the next gen that's inevitably coming in a year or two. I really love, I don't know, Horizon Zero Dawn. Yeah. It means that you can, oh, wow, there's a future where I could get Horizon Zero Dawn, but I can still play, I don't know, a Blizzard Activision game or Call of Duty or whatever on the PlayStation 6. And be a happy camper. And that is a genuinely exciting vision, right? One of the reasons I was excited by the prospect when I was sort of drinking the Kool-Aid was the idea of Xbox games, or specifically Game Pass, being supported on Steam Deck, right? I still think that would be such an incredible experience. I would get a lot of value out of that. It's clear that, I don't think that's happening anytime soon. They said it with no uncertain terms. Xbox consoles will still be the exclusive home of Game Pass besides PC. So that's not going to happen. But I think a lot of that excitement plus the fear just sort of created an echo chamber of sort of the rumor mill spinning, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's probably the case. I mean, there's got to also be a... It's funny to think about the console wars because... We lived through the console wars.
I still have the scars.
Still have the scars to prove it. But I think so much of that was probably driven by a similar thing that is just a little bit more obscured now because social media is such and like brand affiliation is such that things are a little bit more slickly produced these days. But I definitely remember there was just a pure kind of... economical and almost buyer's remorse aspect to it where like I have to support the Super Nintendo or the N64 or the PlayStation or the Saturn because that's the thing I spent $300 on. And I feel like there's like a little undercurrent of God help me. I looked at some of the like social media replies to the Xbox announcements and you know, Phil Spencer tweets and stuff. And there's a not insignificant number of them that are about kind of the health of the Xbox as a brand, like as a console, as an entity where it's like, oh, it's important to support this thing. And then they try to say like, oh, well, competition in the market is good. And if you leave the console space, Sony will just charge us $80 for games because they're going to be the only game in town. Like there's kind of this weird, like, misguided economic reason, whether it's a personal economic reason or whether it's like a misreading of just how like macroeconomics work that that also I think scared people where it's like, oh, I spent $500 on a Series X and another controller and everything. And it's like, is that thing just going to be a brick now? Like what's going to happen? Like there was some sort of undercurrent to that stuff, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's fair, I guess. Like, I don't know. I'm not entirely unsympathetic to folks that have that concern, you know?
Yeah.
And in the podcast, it was a YouTube video, by the way. It's like a video podcast. You can watch it if you haven't had a chance. They talk about the maintaining of your library, right? Like they want to reinsure people like nothing is going to happen to your stuff. You know? And I think in this day and age too, where like digital things disappear off the internet, games get unlisted. Like I don't think it's an unreasonable fear. So, you know, despite wanting to be like, hey, the internet collectively sort of flipped out more than they should. I don't think it was helped by Microsoft's tone, you know, as a result.
Yeah. It almost feels like they were surprised, just as we were, by how how quickly people got in a fervor around this.
I am really curious to see if this reaction has any impact on the, I mean, we'll never know, but like on internal conversations about the future of Xbox, right? Like the Virgin of You with Phil Spencer, they ask him like, hey, you know, these, so they announced four games are coming to the Xbox. We basically know what they are. No one's, it was not official. Fumitsu was reporting, and I think Tom Warren was reporting, it's going to be Hi-Fi Rush, Pentiment, Sea of Thieves, and Grounded. None of which are surprising. Also,
yeah, exactly. Imminently unsurprising and also imminently logical. Like all of those make it, I think, make very good sense to make a multi-platform.
I don't know about Pentiment. That seems like a, like of all the indies, Pentiment?
I mean, Pentiment had huge critical reception last year. And it's one of those things where if you're going to pick two and two, like two multiplayer live service-esque games, and then two critical darlings that probably didn't have a huge budget, and if you sell a bunch more, probably are quite profitable. And it's, I don't know, it just makes a lot of sense. Like, it's a very logical move, and it's not, it's so conservative too. Like, I thought, to me, it would make more sense to do something like Starfield, because that game cost a shit ton of money.
And so, like, players have been dropping like flies from it.
Exactly. Yeah. And if you want to have that game have a longer tail and have a multi-season arc or whatever, it makes a lot more sense to have that on multiple consoles, and also just to make up the money that it took, and like the 10 years or whatever that it took to make that game. It just wasn't as bold. Like, Master Chief is not on a PlayStation. Marcus Fenix is not on a Nintendo Switch. I mean, this is not a revolutionary move by them.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, so what was interesting, right, is the Verge article with Phil Spencer mentions that the way that they structure bonuses for executive management is no longer based on Game Pass subscriptions, which it was for a while, but instead revenue generation from their ongoing and live titles. Yeah. So there's
Because Game Pass subscriptions have been kind of slowing too. So like the execs were very smart to like kind of like, hey, can we get paid off of something else? And like and here we are, you know.
Well, and Phil Spencer describes it, and this is exactly right. The way that he describes the overall health of the ecosystem being important, right? Because you have reliable income from Game Pass, and then you have things like PAL Worlds that are potential major successes, but it's really difficult to plan your fiscal year not knowing if you're gonna have a PAL World.
Right. Exactly.
And so diversifying your revenue sources is a really smart idea. I fully agree with that. I think it's a really great way of thinking about it. And I think I like that approach quite a bit that they're employing. But one of the things that I thought was interesting is that there is a kind of untapped potential if you're defining so much of your revenue generation off of games that provide like consistent value, right? Like gas games, live titles that have consistent season launches, you know, battle passes and things like that. It does make a lot of sense to make those games in particular more accessible across platforms. The four that they listed, I guess Grounded might have one. I don't know enough about that game.
Yeah, maybe Grounded is a multiplayer, and it has
microtransactions.
I think it has some sort of service. Yeah, it has some sort of microtransaction structure. Right.
So I can imagine this being an early test, because if they see a lot of revenue generation from these other consoles that they wouldn't be tapping otherwise, then these types of gas games extending across platforms is a great idea. And it doesn't necessarily threaten a whole lot of the rest of the business, right? Especially when your exclusives might be single player narrative games that don't have that revenue opportunity post-launch. So what I do think is interesting, and Phil Spencer was open to it, was that who knows what the future holds, right? Like, I think they're being extremely cautious. And per your point, I think it's always a little bit weird when hype builds into something that is just very, very business focused, very cautious, because I think that there's this paranoia that, and I don't know what you think of, in terms of like how legitimate it is, but that by releasing these titles across other consoles, you are undercutting your hardware sales necessarily.
I mean, it's hard because they don't, I think they obscure the kind of success of their hardware. I'm not actually quite sure how successful their hardware is. I mean, obviously Sony is selling a lot more PlayStations, and Nintendo's selling a lot more Switches, but yeah. I don't...
Well, Sony just downgraded. I mean, like, they didn't hit their sales target. I think this is, like, the first year where they've come under for hardware sales. And that's true, I think, generally of the whole hardware market, though, right? As we're approaching, what, like, 10 years or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, they must have that built in. You know, Nintendo's going to have a new console this year. Sony is talking about how, like, hey, the PlayStation 5 is kind of half over. Like, you know, they're kind of, like... They're probably assuming some of that stuff, but I mean, I don't know. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if the hardware sales on the Xbox side still are worth it to them. Where it's like, yeah, maybe you're not first in the market, but I don't know. Xbox Series S's seem like they're fairly economical to make and sell, They seem very popular, and so. That's the other kind of funny thing about the whole, oh, Xbox is getting out of the console market. It's like, I'm pretty sure they're making money. So, like, I wouldn't, you know, companies like the hardware are not itself in the is business profitable of not making point. Money, you
yeah.
know, like,
yeah. It's an interesting so, place, yeah, though, I mean, right? Because, like, it's not necessary. We know it's not necessary, right? Like, we've got crossplay across consoles. A lot of revenue generation comes from Game Pass. A lot of revenue generation comes from microtransactions and then the sales of the titles themselves, like a single $300 purchase. Like, yes, I think you're right. They're profitable, but if they want, they could get out of it. You know, they could be like, we're good.
I think I agree. I think the big hurdle for them is there's these other ecosystems that, not only limit their subscription, but actively compete against their subscription, you know, the PS5 stuff, and then Nintendo is not going to allow Game Pass on its system yet, and so they're still kind of competing for that stuff where they have to think about there's a reason why they're bringing some of these games, and the games they're bringing are the actual downloadable / physical versions of these games. They'd probably rather get the service on those platforms, but those other platforms wouldn't want to dilute their own service by allowing that. And so, like, they have to have some sort of first party ecosystem to continue to push that stuff. Mm-hmm. And the PC stuff still isn't PC gaming has never been easier or more accessible, but it's still not as easy as buying a box and then having the game just go. And so, like, they're in a little bit of a tough spot where there's probably a ceiling on top of there's a reason why Game Pass subscriptions are slowing, because it's people are so subscriptioned out that it's actually hard to get more subscriptions in there when your competitors already have them.
And not even just game subscriptions, like all everything. Subscriptions. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they're competing with subscriptions to Netflix, probably, you know, I mean, there's just, it's everything. I mean, the hardware stuff to me is interesting because, and they, you know, we know based off of other leaks and prototypes, they've experimented with pure streaming boxes, you know, like a Amazon Kindle Fire or
Stadia.
Stadia, or you know, we know that there's been, you know, prototypes of that stuff. I think that, like, one of the biggest things that we just kind of take for granted now, like, I think looking at the success of the Switch and then the subsequent success of the Steam Deck, this will be an inflection point where it's now we will evaluate hardware based off of not is it portable or is it a home console, but can you do both?
Yes. Yeah.
And so if I'm Xbox and it's like, man, we already kind of like, we really messed up during the Xbox One era and let Sony pull out so far ahead that even though we probably have a superior piece of hardware and a superior service in Game Pass, we just cannot catch up to Sony on this stuff.
Yeah.
But we see this stuff going on with Nintendo and with Steam on the side. And it's like, what if we had an Xbox game tablet, you know, an actual like Xbox version of the Steam Deck, and then Game Pass would work on it. You could play Halo on it. You could download stuff to it. I mean,
it's a Windows device, so you could play PC games. Yeah. Maybe run Steam on it.
Well, and they're also talking about, I don't know if you followed this, but like that, you know, they're kind of, there's like rumors of the new Windows version being kicked around or whatever. Like,
yeah,
what if they made a version of Windows that was actually functional on mobile? And that was the operating system of an Xbox handheld. I mean, like, that seems like the kind of step change that they would have to make to break away from the stuff that Sony and Nintendo has carved out. Because, you know, they've, I don't know, it's hard to catch up at this point because the ecosystems are so entrenched. But that's a thing that, like, I feel like the console market has fundamentally changed thanks to the Steam Deck and Nintendo. And, and if you're Microsoft, you're like, oh, okay, like, maybe we don't have to make, you know, we don't, or maybe we can just make more. We can make a whole line of Xboxes. This is the Xbox Series M for mobile. And, you know, Nintendo's now we have Series X, Series S, Series M, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I think that is spot on. I would be shocked if they weren't working on some hardware element. And there's already been some leaks about it, right? Like, I think the FTC leaks had mentioned potentially working on a handheld device. Yeah. So, yeah, I'd be shocked if that wasn't the case. It's so interesting because to me, with Game Pass in particular, a slow year with Sony, I think it's going to be a little bit longer until we see what Sony's been working on.
Yeah.
I think Microsoft is really, really well positioned to come out strong. Spencer, I don't know if it was in the interview or on the podcast, but he mentioned like the hardware that they're working on is the biggest leap in console generations ever.
Yeah.
Like, that's a lot of PR speak, but I also buy it. Like, I buy that they're investing in a bigger jump out of a feeling that they need to, right? Because we are in a space where, you're right, with Steam Deck and the OLED Steam Deck, which is handheld and looks great and can dock and is amazing. We're in a world where, you know, it's a small number of people, but like the Apple Vision Pro, you know, these flagship things come out and garner a lot of attention very, very quickly. And that can really set you up for success going into that next generation. So I'm really fascinated to see what they announce. I am disappointed a little bit because, again, I think I wanted Game Pass on the Steam Deck at the end of the day. Right. But yeah, I think they're really well positioned. And I don't know. I think it's their game to lose in a way from what we know. I mean,
we've also seen them with the Xbox 360 where they just cut the generation short and start a new one before the competitors start theirs. You know, like the stroke of genius with the Xbox 360 was they were willing to axe the original Xbox pretty early in the cycle. And then, man, every single Xbox 360 they shipped for like 2 years had a fundamental issue where it would red ring after a while.
Yeah.
And they still created one of the most popular consoles of all time. And that was just like, they saw an opening and they went for it and they got into the ecosystem game really early and they got into the multiplayer on the console system really early. And so maybe they're like, hey, maybe we do it again. You know, like we run the Xbox 360 play with, you know, with the Series M, and then we get in there before Sony can figure out that no one wants to stream on a handheld. They would need a friggin' hard drive. And it's like, here's how it is. And yeah, I mean, like, I don't know, like that could be a really, when they've already said that they don't see, you know, Xbox Series X Pro, they don't see really like a half step happening.
Yeah.
And so that suggests to me that, well, they're not going to wait 7 years. They're just going to start the new generation early.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's such an interesting position they're in too, because of the Activision Blizzard merger and the FTC filings being public and all of the leak stuff. It's happening in a very public way. Like, Sony's working on all this shit too, but we don't see it, you know, in the way that we have with Xbox. So in a way, I think it adds extra pressure to both do it big, right? Like, it can't come out as a whimper. If their announcement of the next Xbox is anything like this podcast, that's a huge mistake, right? and then on top of that, they need to do it quickly because it is public and there is expectations around it. And it's already impacting purchase behavior, I'm sure, of people who are thinking about the future of what Xbox has in store, you know?
Yeah.
From your perspective, like, I mean, again, it's too far in the future to speculate with any kind of informed rationale, but like Sony, Xbox, like PC, like, are you leaning one way or the other? Like, do these announcements or the future that Spencer's talked about make you optimistic or excited for an Xbox? I don't think you and I have owned an Xbox since a while, right?
No, I mean, I totally skipped the Xbox One generation, and then I don't have a Series X or Series S, but I am subscribed to Game Pass.
Exactly, same here.
So it's, I mean, I think that's the, I guess I'm more, well, two things. On a personal level, I'm really impressed and actually, I'm satisfied and impressed with the Xbox strategy overall.
Yeah.
I don't know how healthy it is for the industry at large, you know, sure, like I think sure. the jury's kind of out with all of that stuff, but just on an individual consumer level, I think it's real, like everything they're doing is super smart. I actually think the hardware is amazing. The controller is amazing.
Yeah.
The Game Pass service is amazing. The streaming actually works. Like all of that stuff is really good. It's just, and I think there was, he might have given an interview to like Kind of Funny or someone, like Phil Spencer was a while back. He admitted he said something about how the PlayStation 4, Xbox One generation was a critical generation because that's when people really got entrenched into their ecosystems. That's sure, when people yeah. started buying their digital libraries that, you know, they really got locked in. And so it's hard for you to compete against. Sony was so successful with the PlayStation 4 and Microsoft just fumbled it so hard with the Xbox One that even though the Xbox, I think, is probably a superior piece of hardware and service in basically all ways,
yeah,
it's really hard to get people disconnected from the PlayStation ecosystem now because that's where they bought all their games. Like, that's where all their saves are. That's where everything is, you know, all of their saves for Modern Warfare, all of everything is tied to PlayStation. And then compound that with various economic factors, various socio-political factors that have all compounded to make it so that Xbox really hasn't had a breakout first party
yeah.
stable of games for quite some time now. And it's just in a tough spot, yeah. except for weirdos like us who have multiple consoles, but also have PCs, also have Steam Decks. Like, we actually don't need Xbox hardware. We need Xbox services. And so yes. we're quite happy with it, you know?
Yeah. 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 And this is why Spencer was so adamant talking about cross saves being a major yes. focus, right? Because when you have reliable cross saves, you make that transition so much smoother for yes. people who are interested in swapping hardware. Yeah. What I'll say in terms of my own habits is, you know, I was looking at my PlayStation library the other day because I was trying to find a game to play with the little one, and I realized how few digital games I actually have. Like, my yeah. ecosystem investment was heavily on PlayStation Network games.
Yes.
Which, yeah. because I'm not a subscriber, I can't even fucking play anymore.
Right.
Right. Or the physical discs that I still have, which is fine. Right. But I think at this point, like, I'm a free agent. You know what I mean? Yeah. I have no loyalty one way or the other. Yes, yeah. I love Game Pass because in a world of subscriptions, it is the amazing value to this day. Like, compared yeah. to the trim down of Netflix subscriptions and yep. Max the One to Watch for HBO and, you know, all the other subscription service. Your Dyson Vacuum has a subscription service, I'm sure. Xbox still kind of reigns supreme with the Game Pass. But there's a world where I say, fuck it. Like, I'm just going to go all in on Steam and,
yeah.
you know, lean on the Steam Deck really hard because I'm loving the functionality of being able to play on the go and on my PC. Yes. You know, so
yeah,
it's an interesting time, I think, to be someone like you and I, where it's kind of I'm an empowered wait and see kind of situation, you know?
Yep. Yep. Because we have the options and the options, not only from a hardware perspective, but from a services perspective.
Yep.
If I was Microsoft, I would be trying my hardest to get a Steam Deck competitor out before Steam creates a subscription service.
100%. 100%. Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's no,
somewhere in the bowels of Steam, there's a whiteboard with like a subscription model on it.
You know? I don't know what is going on in the liminal space that is the offices of Steam, because I don't know. I mean, maybe I would love that would be amazing. A Steam subscription. Yes, let's go. But you're right. Like, if they I could easily see myself buying a second handheld system if yeah. it plays Game Pass solely yep. for that convenience. I've done the cloud on with Edge, like, it works ish for some games, yeah. but man, having the capability to play on the go like that would round it up. But in a way, yeah. I think it would also result in Spencer's fear about undermining console sales. Cause I think if I had a handheld, I would not need to buy an Xbox console. Yeah. You know, yeah. I would buy the next Sony thing, knowing that mm-hmm. I'm comfortable with the handheld. And maybe that's okay from Microsoft's perspective. That's the thing that is so interesting to me about the way that they talk about their business model, because it makes sense to me, but it also makes it really challenging for me to understand where they would prioritize. Like, you and I talked about this off mic like a couple weeks ago, but we've been in podcasting about games and thinking about games and working in this space for a long time. I still don't know what sells hardware and like what is the right business decision. I've never been the Mr. Businessman guy on the podcast, but like there's just something that is so inscrutable to me as to, given the possibilities, what is their real priority? Like, do they prioritize something like the Steam Deck? Do they prioritize all in Game Pass? Do they prioritize, you know, more games going across services if they find out that they're a great revenue generator? Like, I don't know. That's tough.
I mean, I think the one thing that we can probably confidently say is what sells, what is helping Sony is The Last of Us and God of War and Spider-Man. And like they have games that sell consoles and Xbox doesn't right now. That's why they've spent billions of dollars, you know, acquiring a stable of games potentially to sell consoles. But in that context, it makes a lot more sense that they're trying to diversify what platforms those games show up on, because they're not console sellers yet. There's also, that's also the reason why they're only dipping their toe in with 4, because the minute they get a console seller, they can then pivot back and be like, nope, you can only get the new Master Chief on Xbox. You know, like that, they don't want to. This is like a fundamentally testing iterative move for the realities that Xbox is dealing with right now. Like, they're dealing with a reality where they do not have a Kratos. And so it's like, okay, well, in the absence of a Kratos, we're going to play Moneyball. We're going to put our games everywhere so that we create a Kratos in the aggregate. But the minute we have a Kratos of our own, we're going to pull all of that shit
our
back.
Our PAL world or whatever. Yeah,
exactly. Like, we're going to force everyone back into the ecosystem when we can command that attention. But in the world where you can't command the attention on a single game, it makes so much sense to spread it out, because you're just you're leaving money on the table by not doing it. And so their challenge is, how much do we invest in that strategy to then have to unwind it someday when the next big hit for Xbox comes out?
Yeah. One of the things I thought was so interesting about the podcast was how often Spencer mentioned creators. Like, this is a creator space, which is just like, this is what attracts players.
Yeah.
And what is going to sell hardware. And I do think there's a world where it mirrors almost what you see in cinema and streaming, where there's exclusivity windows, right? Yes. Where Halo does come to PlayStation 5, but not until a full year after it's been released, right? And at a full year, it's a live game, so there's going to be a lot of revenue to generate very, very quickly by selling on those consoles. But look, if you want to play with your friends, and more importantly, if you want to play the games that the creators are playing and the influencers are playing day one, you got to get in on our hardware. That, to me, feels like the best of both worlds, like those exclusivity windows. And there's so much flexibility there, because if you think a game is going to be a big revenue generator in its live phase, but not make a big splash right off the bat, you can shorten that window, right? Like, you can have a window where it's 2 months, it's 3 months, it's TBD. We'll announce it when it's going to be available across platforms. But for the big ones, maybe it's a year. Maybe most Xbox games have, I don't know, 2 week exclusivity window or 3 month exclusivity window. But Halo, it's 3 years, you know, or something crazy like that.
Right.
All of those are on the menu for Xbox if they want it.
Yeah, which is why they'd never make a decision that is so hard to unwind that they don't have options anymore, which is why people got so worked up. It's like, you don't need to get worked up, because Microsoft isn't stupid. Like, they want to keep their options open. Like, they're not just going to like end this thing, because they know the minute they get something, the minute they need to pivot, they need the ability to pivot. And so they're not going to take that option away from themselves when it's not like their business is in trouble.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, they're not Sega, you know, like, they're not, you know, their business isn't like fully in trouble. It's like, they're just trying to figure out what the next
and yet they do layoffs. Looks like. Massive layoffs.
Well, they love those stock bumps that those layoffs give them, you know?
Like, for sure. That's why I also think Sony's in an interesting position, because what the fuck, like, they can't do anything, right? Like, they should like steady on, hope for the best.
I mean, that's Sony is, you know, in a weird way, it's almost like they're in such a great position right now, but they're so beholden to those huge hits. You know, it's like, well, the next Spider-Man better be good. You know, like, what's Naughty Dog doing? Like, and, like, the minute that dries up, they don't have something as compelling as Microsoft. And then what?
You got to buy up another
on your exclusivity windows for Modern Warfare. Like, I don't know. That doesn't seem super compelling.
Interesting times. I really hope we get the console announcements this year. Like, I want us to just get it over with. You know what I mean? Like, let the hype cycle begin now.
Yeah. All those leaks from the lawsuits and stuff. I mean, there's clearly stuff in the works, and so it'll be fun to see what they've been working on.
Yeah.
And I feel like it'll be an exciting thing too, because they're playing from a position of having to take some chances.
Yep, for sure. Spencer said June was their next sort of announcement phase, but fat chance that it's like a huge announce, I think, you know.
We won't get consoles this year. Yeah, I think it'll be an announcement, and then who knows what's next. I just want my internet connected controller. Like, that's the thing that I really wanted from all that leaks. Like, just give me an updated Xbox controller that has lower latency. That's I'll be very happy with all that stuff, you know?
Yeah. That I don't have to plug in to update its firmware.
Exactly. Exactly. Oh my God. All right. Well, that's all the news from Microsoft land. An extremely, I feel bad for the people that work there, because the last 2 weeks for them have been so bad for no reason. And so it's like, it just sucks.
That sucks. Like, that's a good point too. Cause it's like, you didn't even do anything wrong, but you're still stressing about your PR emails and getting everything approved up the chain. Like, yeah, that sucks.
Phil Spencer has had to do so many stupid interviews where he was like, I was supposed to go to my kid's recital, and now I'm talking to Stephen Totilo right now. Like, what am I doing?
Yeah.
Like, what?
I love reading his interviews and watching him speak, though, because, like, the dude been is playing the game for so fucking long that it's second nature. Like, yeah, you read those interviews, and he does not slip up, you know?
No.
It's masterclass. It's boring, I think, in many ways, but it is masterclass.
Yeah. This is someone who knows the business, who knows how to give a good interview, who's personable.
He knows the lines he has to deliver, right?
Exactly. Like, yes. He hits his beats. Like, I mean, it's just like, he is very good at what he does.
Yeah.
It's just so hilarious that they had to trot him out to do it for like a completely pointless thing, you know?
Like, yeah. Good times.
All right. ExperiencePoints@gmail.com is our email address.
And experiencepoints.net is the website. You can listen to us wherever you find podcasts, because we're crossplay, baby.
Everywhere. We're in the cloud.
Do us a favor, leave us a review, and tell a friend.
All right, everyone. As always, thanks so much for listening. We will talk to you next week.
Ciao. I